This is the start of the August 5th, 1986 interview with Matt Rowland, owner of Matt Rowland Seafood of Mayport, Florida. The interview concerns the history of Mayport and seafood companies and is conducted by David Taylor. This interview was done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project supported by the American Folklife Center. This is August 5th, 1986.
Now, first of all, I wanted to ask you if you could tell me when you were born and where. What's your birthday?
March 16, 1927.
And where were you born?
Fuzeta, Portugal.
What part of the country is that?
Southern Portugal.
Is that, I think your wife was telling me, the Algarve?
Algarve, yeah. Uh-huh.
Was your father involved in fishing in Portugal?
Yeah.
What kind of fishing did he do?
Well, when he was real young, probably about 10 years old, he'd go out with his father on a small boat and fish the coast. Mm-hmm. When he got older, when he was about 15, then he started going cod fishing. To the, what they call the Grand Banks. And
I'll hold on to that.
That's right. That's when they used to use dories. Mm-hmm. And they'd go across and spend about 6 months. And I don't know how many years he did that. Let me see. Because I think he came to this country when he must have been about 22 or 23. So he must have done that till he was about 23 years old.
So he fished off Newfoundland then, I guess, off the banks there?
Yeah.
In schooners then?
Yeah.
Indoors? Well,
yeah.
That's the hard way to fish.
Yeah. But that's the way all cod fishing was done back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's back in, let me see. That's back in the 20s.
Yeah.
1919. Wait a minute, he was in this country in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have come to this country a little when he was about 20.
Yeah. What was your father's name?
Matthias, M-A-T-I-S, Rolland, R-O-L-A-O. That was my name too, but when I came to this country, he changed this to Roland, and I changed mine to Roland. Kept both names, matter of fact. He kept both names, and I changed mine to Roland.
Mm-hmm.
So on my citizenship papers, it's Roland.
Mm-hmm.
Matthias Roland, the what we thought would be the English version.
Yeah. Well, why did he decide to come to the United States?
To make a better living.
Mm-hmm. Did he come first to Florida or some other part of the country?
No, he came to Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
I think he first went to Provincetown. And some of his, I think some of his sisters and, I don't know if, brother, I know one of his sisters went there. Well, she died there during the great flu epidemic. You know when that was?
I've heard my parents talk about it.
Was that about 1919 or something like that?
I think so. Yeah. About what time did he come down to Florida?
That I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me see. I came to this country in 1937, and he was already here. So it must have been in the early, around 1930 or around 1929.
Mm-hmm. Was he here all by himself?
No.
Family, or how did that work?
Well, I think he... They used to come down with on boats from up there that fished on bluefish. Mm-hmm. And a certain time of the year, they'd come down and fish on bluefish, and then they'd go back up north when the bluefish would disappear, or maybe they'd follow the bluefish, because I heard him talk about that. And I think a number of them had such a hard time making a living that... They stayed down here. I wish I could remember why. Mm-hmm. I remember him talking about how many potatoes he ate, because they were the cheapest thing they could find to eat at that time. Mm-hmm. So things must have been kind of tough in those days.
Did you have many brothers and sisters?
No. I was the only son. See, I was born in Portugal. And me and my mother stayed there for 10 years before I came. So I was 10 years old, and I hadn't seen my father. My father hadn't been back for 10 years. And then when we got over here, then my mother had and my father had 2 daughters. So my family is me and 2 sisters.
Oh yeah. What was it like growing up in your community in Portugal?
Well, I enjoyed living there. I missed not having a father, of course. But my father had plenty of brothers, and I went around to see him and, you know, talk to him. And, of course, I was around the fish market and the fishing boats and, you know, they take me out to visit the fishing boats and all that. So I didn't feel like I was deprived in any sense. We had, we didn't suffer for any lack of good food, I mean, you know, enough to eat and everything. We lived a comfortable life because my father sent money from the United States. And of course, American dollars were pretty valuable over there, so we had what I consider a good life over there.
Did you, when you were that age, did you think you were going to be a fisherman too?
Never thought about it, one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Never crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother was always talking about that I should get a good education.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't enter into my mind either. Not at that time, not when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And when I came to this country, I never thought about becoming a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
It just never crossed my mind. Not that I had anything against it or for it, it just never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
For one thing, I always got deathly seasick when I went out.
Oh, yeah.
But there have been members of my family who have gotten seasick and they went on to become fishermen. I have an uncle of mine who came from Portugal, and he came over here about the same time I did. He's older than me, and he became a fisherman, and he was got seasick and fished on a shrimp boat, and he met his girlfriend, whom he married, from up north, and he went up north. He fished on the trawlers there, and eventually became a lobster fisherman, and that's what he is now, a lobster fisherman. Fishes one of those small lobster boats.
That's up in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Yeah. What was it like when you came to the United States? How did you find it? When you were 10 at the time, did you say?
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought I adjusted to it pretty well. I kind of missed Portugal because, you know, I missed the friends that I had there that I played with. And, you know, it was a different life, a little bit of different environment, not a different life. I mean, still around seafood and fish. And naturally, the boys picked on me because I was a foreigner. And but I never felt like I was a foreigner. I mean, the kids would call me a damn Portuguese or a damn black Portuguese or whatever. But it never bothered me. And the whole time in this country, I never felt like I was a foreigner. I just accepted my fate or my environment and never thought a thing about it, whether I was a foreigner or not.
Did you learn any English in Portugal before you came here?
No. No, I didn't know any English. I was put in the third grade. Then the following year I was advanced to the fifth, and then the following year I was advanced to the seventh, which brought me up to my correct age group. Mm-hmm.
Was that in Florida that you went to school?
Right here in Mayport.
Oh, yeah. What was the community like then?
Very much like it is now.
Were there other Portuguese families here at that time?
I think there was one that I know that I think there was one, yeah, by the name of Luis Pereira. Pereira.
How would you spell that name?
Pereira.
Mm-hmm. Were there families from other countries?
Now there were other Portuguese. Now there were other Portuguese fishermen here. I think there might have been several Portuguese families. A lot of Portuguese fishermen. Some of the Portuguese fishermen had left their families there, and they married women here. They never went back, and they never got their wives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they had two families, one there and one here.
Hmm.
Well, one family at a time, because when they got this one, they never went back.
Right. Hmm. Were there families from other countries that lived here, too?
I don't remember any other country.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there may have been one Italian family, but most Italian families, most Italians went to Fernandina, a few went to Fernandina, and a few went to St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
So there were Italians in Fernandina and St. Augustine.
What kind of work was your father doing here in Mayport when you arrived here?
Well, by this time, he had bought a fish house, and I think he had one boat, one shrimp boat, and he bought he handled his own boat's shrimp, and he bought shrimp from other shrimp boats. So he had what you call a packing house like I do now.
Was it on the same property that your facility?
No, it's right next door.
Oh, yeah. How did he manage to get started in a business that sounds like it was quite sizable?
It wasn't very sizable then. But it was a some amount of progress to, you know, to save the money and to be able to buy. He rented the property and then he bought it. So, you know, he did make some kind of progress in that respect.
Were there other seafood companies in Mayport at that time?
Yes. Oh, yeah, there were. There was another Portuguese group right next door to him who were much bigger than my father. They owned quite a few boats and all, and I think there were about three brothers. And they were instrumental, I believe, or a big part in developing the shrimp fishery in Louisiana. They had a very poor season here, and somehow they heard there was shrimp in Louisiana, so they left. Two of them left here and went to Louisiana, and they became quite large in the shrimp business there.
What was their name?
Well, we call this one here Manuel Jesus, the one who stayed here.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it was, his last name was Carinhas. But they also had another name. Santos, I think Santos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I think one was called Manuel Jesus, but that wasn't his last name. Manuel Carinhas, Manuel Santos, but they were brothers. And I just can't remember, you know, about the names. But they became quite large in Louisiana. One in particular became had a freezer plant, and he went into the pogie business. That's the Menhaden business, and he also went into boat building. He built steel hulls there.
That was in Louisiana, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were some of the other seafood companies, in addition to Manuel Jesus and your father?
Well, I remember there was a black man here who had a small place. He didn't own any boats, but he bought shrimp from other boats, and his name was Ike Lewis. And then there was a Portuguese by the name of Jesse Perry. Now this is 1937 only. Jesse Perry, who also owned a couple boats, and he handled his own shrimp from his own boats. But that might have been in 1940 or 42.
But those were all the ones that were around when you came?
As far as I can remember.
Yeah. Who do people say was the very first person to start a seafood company in Mayport?
I can't think of their names. My father rented the fish house from them. They were an American couple. She ran the post office and also helped run the business. And I'm sure that if you ask John, have you talked to John Drew?
No, but someone recommended him just the other day.
He might remember their names.
He works down at Miss Becky's in the store.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out who they were because... Because my father made good friends with them, and they helped my father get started.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I find out, I'll let you know.
What?
If I find out, I'll let you know.
Okay. Well, I met them, but I can't remember their names right now.
Mm-hmm. What was your dad's operation like back then? What were some of the types of equipment they had, and what did it look like if you were going to describe it to me?
Okay, well, back in those days, the boats brought in, they caught quite a few shrimp back in those days during the season. And we you know, we'd bring him in and put him on a table. Back in those days, we hoisted the shrimp up from the boats by hand, by block and tackle. We didn't have a winch like we've got now. So that was done by hand. Of course, I imagine if we'd have thought of it, we could have got a winch. And then we just carted it into the fish house and put it on tables like you see here, where the people stand around and hit shrimp. And sometimes we'd work till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And the people bring their, when they hit the shrimp, they bring the shrimp to the scale so we can weigh them up and pay them. And then we dump the shrimp into a steel vat, galvanized vat, with water. And then we'd bail it out with a scoop. You know, everything was done by hand.
Did you handle fish too, or only shrimp?
Well, back in those days, we only handled shrimp. We didn't handle fish. Our fish house didn't. Now, Gerald Pack, his father handled fish. Mm-hmm. Have you talked to Gerald Pack?
Well, I've talked to him on the phone. I haven't had a chance to sit down with him
yet. His father was Hobart Pack. And he handled fish. But he didn't, I don't think he handled shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
So, back in those days, we had pickers like we have now. And practically every day we'd have shrimp. We'd work till midnight, 1 o'clock. Then we'd start up again the next morning at 8 o'clock. Sometimes we'd have shrimp left over that we couldn't head, and we start up in the morning again and head the shrimp. But a lot of times, as the black pickers, or headers, whatever you want to call them, would get toward midnight, they started getting tired, they would start singing, what do you call those songs?
What were they like? What did they sound like?
You know, would it be minstrels or folk songs, or you know, they had their songs that they sang. Maybe hey Junior.
Yes, sir.
Way back then, what kind of songs did the black pickers sing? What do you call those songs?
They used to just sing church hymns.
Yeah, but what's the name for them?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. It's been so long. But it is. You should get together and just go to singing head all night long.
Oh, yeah. Like gospel songs from the church? Okay.
Yeah. Ask Emma what they call those songs. You got a name for them.
All right. Let me have your, what did you put in that pen?
What pen?
That pen I showed you this morning.
I don't know. Oh, it's in the truck. Why?
Tears on them, filling pot of them. I got to stick out and try to work with it.
Oh. Well, that'll just come out, won't it?
Well, I got to roll them with something, Bo.
Well, I put it in the truck because I don't think I'm telling you the name.
Which one? Pickup?
Yeah, pickup. Yeah, minstrels or... Yeah, that's right.
And that was mainly in the evening when people were tired?
Yes, they got tired and... Well, you know, I mean, to kind of pick them up, they started singing. Automatically started singing.
How long has it been since people stopped doing that?
Gee, I don't know.
More than 10 years?
Probably 15 or 20 years, I guess. I'd say about, let's see, I've been here... 37, almost 37 and 59, 49. Damn, I didn't know I'd been here that long. 49 years. 49 years. No, I'd say 20, 25. 20 years anyway, yeah. 25 maybe. It's been quite a while since I heard these people sing.
Well, what was your first job with your father working in his company? What did you start out
with? Well, I worked in the fish house from the time I came in. My job was helping, was paying the pickers. You'd have this metal box, and when the pickers brought up a bucket, I'd pay them 15 cents. Or I forget what it was. And also helped around the fish house, you know, whatever I could do. So I always worked. I mean, I had no specific job.
Talking about paying 15 cents for a bucket. Now, how did that work?
Oh, I don't remember how much you paid back. I think it was a dime back in those days, or maybe a nickel. I don't remember.
That was for the weight of the shrimp that the heads had been taken.
Yeah, they'd put them in the bucket.
Yeah.
And we'd pay them by the bucket. Mm-hmm. And funny part about that is they had their own little thing about the bucket. All the buckets were the same size.
Yeah.
And they would, let's say this is the bucket. They would stick a wide stick down the bucket like this. And then they would throw the shrimp in. Mm-hmm. And then they would draw the stick out. When it got full, we'd draw the stick out slowly. The main purpose is that the shrimp wouldn't be heavily packed in there. It'd be kind of fluffy, so.
So they got paid not by weight, but really by volume.
Yeah, they got paid by volume. So naturally, they always put that stick in there and then draw the stick out gently so it wouldn't pack the shrimp down heavily.
What do they call those sticks? Any special name?
Sticks?
Yeah.
Just a regular stick, any kind of stick. Huh. Dee, what'd you find out?
You couldn't fish your...
How did you go about hiring people to do the picking?
We didn't hire them, they just showed up.
Is that pretty much the way it works now, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they were shrimp, they just showed up and started hitting.
Yeah. Now, you said, I think, that your dad owned boats, and... He hired other fishermen too, or he hired skippers to take his boats. Is that how it went?
Yeah.
How did he? How did you decide how much to pay the skippers? What kind of arrangements would there be in that way?
They paid a percentage like we do today.
Well, is it like based on shares?
Or yeah.
How would that? What kind of share arrangement might that be?
Well, today is most boats get paid 35%. Back in those days, I can't remember, but it was some of the same type of arrangement. Mm-hmm.
And there were fishermen who owned their own boats who also sold.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Did they sell to many different buyers, or
no?
Just the one.
You know, sometimes a boat might get, an owner might get angry, a captain might get angry, and move his boat to another dock. But normally, they would stay in the same place year after year.
Would the shrimp buyers compete to get fishermen by raising the prices, or? Was there much competition amongst the buyers for the fishermen?
No, there wasn't that much competition because there were so many shrimp that actually they had a very difficult time selling the shrimp. The market was much more limited.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
Hello. We used to ship most of our shrimp by Railway Express. I don't think they use trucks very much. I think Junior got the key. No, wait a minute, I got it. When we used to get the shrimp, we would get the box tops and nail them. Then put them on a truck, take them to Jacksonville, put them on Railway Express, and go to New York. Now, in those days, we used to ship shrimp to New York every day, except for Saturday and Sunday. Although, back in those days, they might have been open Saturdays. I'm not sure.
But did it go to a wholesaler or to a market?
Yeah. Same market, Fulton Fish Market.
Oh, yeah.
We used to sell a few shrimp around Jacksonville, not very many. Mm-hmm. Most of them went to New York.
Okay. And it was wooden boxes that you shipped in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not like these wooden boxes, you know, a little bit heavier made. Mm-hmm.
Were those made around here?
Matt Roland. Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D. Uh, 241-7972. Ice machine. Hello?
Were the wooden boxes made around here, or did you get them from someplace else?
No, they came from Vidalia, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. When you were a boy, did you ever remember people making barrels or using barrels around here?
No.
Pretty well gone by?
No, we used boxes.
Yeah. What about boat building? Was there any boat building here years ago?
Yeah. Mostly in St. Augustine. I think mostly... The Greeks built boats then.
Exonides family?
Exonides, and I forget the names of others, but There were several Greek boat builders.
Mm-hmm. So you were telling me about getting involved with your father's company by paying the pickers. As you got older, what were some of the responsibilities that you took on?
Well, I helped in the fish house, pack the shrimp, load the trucks, just manual work, just manual labor.
Yeah. Did you ever do any fishing yourself?
I remember one time when I was 18 years old, my father decided to go on vacation for 1 week or something like that. He went up north. And he left me to run the fish house. But when I did, those Portuguese fishermen were kind of a little bit wise, so they didn't do much fishing while he was gone. And my father gave me hell for it. He was the kind of person that he only gave hell to guys who would take it. Guys who wouldn't take it, he wouldn't give them hell to. So naturally he gave me hell, and that kind of relieved his responsibility of getting things right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hello. When did you take over the business yourself?
I never took off my father's business. I worked with him until I was 39 years old, and then I finally left him and came over here. This is a real old, dilapidated fish house that he and I had bought together for $5,000, and I sold ice through here. While I was working for him, I got an ice business, and I sold boats of ice. And then we had a disagreement, and I left him. But I left him in, you know, a good friendship and all. And he turned over all the independent boats that he bought from over to me. So then, because he said he didn't want any, he didn't want to buy from independent boats. They were too much trouble.
Yeah. What year was that that you started in over here?
20 years ago.
Yeah.
Roosevelt, I've been over here for 10 years, 20 years. 20? Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah. And there are members of your family that work with you here too?
My wife, she wants to quit every day. She threatens to quit. But she can't because she's got all the money. I got two of my sons working here. Then I got one son in Fort Myers that's running a fish house down there that we have leased.
Uh-huh. What are your sons' names?
One is Vincent, one is Paul, one is Brad. Brad is in Fort Myers. Vincent and Paul are here. They just got started with them. I got one more son who's working for the city of Jacksonville, and I got a daughter who's working for an investment firm in New York.
What kind of seafood do you handle here now?
Mostly shrimp, some fish, grouper and snapper, but mostly shrimp.
Mm-hmm. And do you own your own boats now?
I have a partnership in two boats, mm-hmm. two shrimp boats.
Mm-hmm. And the remainder of the shrimp are purchased from independent skippers?
Yeah.
What are the names of the boats that you have interests in?
Ashley 1L is one of them. That's named after my partner's granddaughter. Mm-hmm. No, wait a minute. It's named after my granddaughter and his granddaughter. Ashley is my granddaughter, 1L is his. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Joyce and Rose. It's named after my wife and his wife.
Oh, yeah.
My wife is Rose and his wife is Joyce.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to some men who were working on their cables out here at a boat that's at the end of your wharf here, and it sounded like they were speaking Portuguese.
Yeah, there are some Portuguese fishermen here.
Oh, yeah. Do they live here year-round?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Live year-round.
Bob, how many people are working as pickers here, or headers of the shrimp?
Oh, it varies, depending how many shrimp we got and how many want to head. You know, it might be 25, 30, 40, sometimes, 50.
Are there people who do filleting here, too, or do you sell your fish green?
We don't get into that very much, into filleting. We do fillet, but when we do, we just, you know, get a couple guys that know how to do it.
Yeah.
Not that much of a business like it is up in Boston.
Yeah.
I mean, Gloucester.
Are all your shrimp and fish sold fresh, or do you do any freezing here?
Practically all the fish are sold fresh. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the shrimp are sold fresh. And some are frozen, bags that are frozen.
This little retail market to the left of us here, is that owned by your company too?
I own the property, but I rent the market.
Mm-hmm. When people come to work in the plant here, do they have to learn any particular skills if they don't have before they come in?
No. Mm-hmm. No, ain't much to learn, just like... The guy said, damn, you went to college and came back and put on a pair of boots just like me. You wasted a lot of time going to school, didn't you?
Yeah.
In a way, he's right, I guess. But you don't go to school just to learn to, you know, make money.
Right.
School is a much broader thing than learning a specific trade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, education is.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't think I wasted my time at all.
Where did you go to school?
Florida.
Oh, yeah. What did you study?
Well, I was mostly interested in literature and philosophy.
Uh-huh.
But I went into business administration
mm-hmm.
to get my degree. But in those days, we had a real good first 2 years. What do you call it? The arts?
Liberal
arts. Liberal arts,
yeah.
And that's what I enjoyed about school the most.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my background, too. Well,
really?
It's still is. How do you think the seafood business has changed over the years, since when you were working for your father till now?
Well, it's gotten much, much bigger. A lot more people eat more seafood. I mean, the market has expanded tremendously. And it's now an international market rather than a local market. Years ago, people would invest their money, I mean, people in the shrimp business, in freezing shrimp and holding it till after the season was over, and a lot of times the market price would reflect how well a season was going in a particular area. But now it's not that way at all. It's all worldwide, international. Everything affects the prices. Supply and demand, of course, is the main thing, and then the value of the dollar and the exchange rate, that affects it.
Mm-hmm.
And worldwide production affects it. So it's different, you know. We get shrimp from all over the world now.
Hmm.
And we're beginning to get a lot more fish from all over the world, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more fish are being... Fresh fish is being sent in foreign countries by airplane.
Throughout 12 months of the business, do you do the same things from week to week, or is there a difference throughout the year in terms of species or just the type of work that you're doing?
Well, certain times of the year, certain months, we have a very, very slow business here. And
what time of year would that be?
From here in this area, it'd be from January. February through through May. Those are slow months.
Do you handle the same species of shrimp all the time, or are there different kinds?
Well, we have two different species, the browns and the whites.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two main species here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have rock shrimp, which is a completely different species. We have a few boats that fish on rock shrimp when the rock shrimp are there, but a lot of boats don't fish on them. They just don't care to fish on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much cheaper variety, and you have to get a whole lot of them to make it pay.
Mm-hmm. I've just got a couple more questions. I know you're
okay.
Busy today. Earlier we were talking about some of the older seafood companies in Mayport. Are there companies... that are going on now, like yours, that have been parts of families for some time?
Yeah, well, Gerald Pack, his father was in the business a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the Leaks. I'm not sure about them.
The Beasleys, have they been in the business for a long time?
Al Leak, Atlantic Seafood? I don't know.
Okay.
He's been in the business about 20 years, probably.
We were talking also about Portuguese traditions. I was wondering if in your family you carry on any traditions that are Portuguese, like food or family celebrations or language, anything like that?
No, not particularly. Not, you know, specifically Portuguese. Not really, because there isn't a large community of Portuguese that you're a member of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, in New Bedford, they have, Portuguese festivals and all that, see, because they have a whole community of Portuguese who live together and, practice the heritage. But here, we're scattered out. In other words, we go to school with the native-born Americans, and there's no celebration of any Portuguese customs that I can remember.
Are there any large communities of Portuguese anywhere in Florida that you know about?
Not that I know.
Yeah. Do you get back to Portugal at all yourself?
I've been back one time since I came.
Really?
Yeah, about 6 years ago.
That's all the questions I've got. Is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about? Any important?
No, I can't remember. I mean, I can't think of anything.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for talking to me today.
This is the end of the August 5th, 1986 interview with Matt Rowland of Matt Rowland Seafood, Mayport, Florida. The interviewer was David Taylor. And the interview was done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project, supported by the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. End of interview, end of tape.